Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is artist Marion Van Soest. Van Soest began her career as a technical science writer in Washington before coming to Ithaca, where she earned a master's degree in design from Cornell University. She owned a small design business called Spring Grace Design, where she designed graphics, gardens, and interiors. She also volunteered at Suicide Prevention and finally worked her way to becoming director of the organization. In retirement, she turned seriously to art and has been a working artist, painting fascinating landscapes and abstracts ever since. She is a member of Ithaca's State of the Art Gallery. And welcome to the show, Marion.
Thank you very much, Tish.
Now, you didn't seriously pursue art until you retired, but you stated in one of your biographical sheets that you think you wanted to be an artist from a very young age.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Well, I lived in a very small town in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. There was no art to be seen anywhere, but I had a great uncle who was an artist. So I used to draw pictures from the newspaper of basketball players, and anything I would just copy from the from the newspaper. So that's how I learned to draw.
Uh-huh.
And I really didn't begin painting at all until I retired, or I knew I was going to retire from suicide prevention.
Yeah.
Well, about one or two courses or something.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and you also started out as a technical science writer.
Yes. Well, I got one of these useless degrees in English from Swarthmore College, and that was the kind of job I found I could do.
Uh-huh.
And I worked for an electronics firm that did reliability studies for the airlines and the space and the Navy and so on. But I was a ghost.
Oh.
I don't think I ever was able to publish under my own name, which was probably a good thing, because I hadn't done the research. I'd only...
But do you feel like you were a good writer? Did you ever want to pursue creative writing after that?
I thought about it quite seriously, but my real love was in the visual arts. So I thought, if I'm going to do anything expressive, I really want to do it in the visual field.
Yeah, and did you realize as you were coming through these fields of writing and so on that you were going to pursue painting? Were there different aspects of visual arts that you were thinking about in your head before you took it up?
I didn't really think about painting until I realized that design is a very difficult thing to do in Ithaca. You can be a graphic artist. That's fine. That works here.
Yeah, that's called
You don't
for.
Design furniture here. You don't, you know. And interior.
but you ended up getting a degree from Cornell in design, right?
I did.
Yeah.
I did. And that was an enormous amount of fun. And so I began to love color, shapes, line, all those things that go into graphic work. And when I had a chance finally to see whether I could have anything to say at all, I wanted to put those things into play, particularly the color. So I have pushed color way beyond its normal
limits. Well, you must have been interested in design to pursue a degree in design. Is that because you thought it was a practical visual art to go into and you probably could make a living? Precisely, right? You're going, yes?
Well, sort of. I mean, I thought about getting a PhD in art history, but wives, you know, were not allowed. They didn't get the same benefits that children of professors did. So I worked my way through the design. The design program let me also take courses wherever I wanted to in the university, which was wonderful. So I found good design in the architecture school and the architecture.
I'm sure it was a good basis for what
it was
you
wonderful.
Ended up pursuing.
It was just wonderful.
Now, you also took another segue and got into social services. Now, tell us about that. You said it was life-changing to pursue, you know, suicide prevention.
Well, it was. I always wanted to do something of service to the world. And I just sort of fell into this as a volunteer. And it was kind of a high point in the... Nina Miller was the director when I joined, and Nina let me write pamphlets and design the pamphlets. And you know.
So you got to do all kinds of things in the organization.
It put me in touch with people at a very deep level. And so, yes, it did change my life. It made me understand a whole lot of things that I didn't know before.
Yeah. I understand pursuing social services, but suicide prevention is quite a task at hand to pursue. You also worked as a counselor, right?
Yes. Well, I started as a counselor. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And then I got onto the board and then onto the staff and sort of on up.
Uh-huh.
But that was to satisfy my kind of need for service.
Uh-huh. Was that instilled in you from a young child? Was that something your family said you've got to give back to your community?
Yes, and then I went to a Quaker college, so yes, indeed. Service was part of the, you know, it was a requirement.
Uh-huh. And so while you were doing this service, it was always in the back of your head that you wanted to pursue art, right? Was this a longing that was constantly...
Well, I had this design business sort of...
At the same time.
Fermenting on the side.
Uh-huh.
And then when I left suicide prevention, I could see that possibly I had 30 years of working life ahead of me, and what was I going to do with it? And now is my chance to try fine art.
Yeah.
And
Well, tell us how you did that. So you were with suicide prevention for about 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as you retired, you decided you were going to take up painting. Tell us how you did
that. I had a plan.
Did you? Okay, tell us how you did that.
Right, the plan was...
This is very inspiring to a lot of people to know that you can take something up that you've always loved later in life.
Later in life, yes. Well, about 6 years before I retired, I could see retirement coming up. And, well, I had had to drop the design business when I became director. You can't do two jobs.
Oh, yeah.
Those jobs at the same time. So... I began taking these workshops that I mentioned all over the country, and I became fascinated by painting, especially watercolor.
Uh-huh.
And so by the time I left suicide prevention, I was already doing it. And then within a year or two, I got into the state-of-the-art gallery, and then I had an obligation, you see, to produce.
Well, tell us why watercolor was your first love. Well, what was it about watercolor that took your imagination?
Simply the color. The color is so pure and beautiful, and you can push it. It's portable.
Uh-huh.
For me, it was easy for some reason or other.
And then what kinds of subjects were you pursuing at that time?
Well, I started out in landscape, and I did some figures. I had always been interested in figures. And then I began to push the color a bit beyond reality.
Ah.
And so I did some barns in blues and reds and purples, and that was the beginning of the abstraction.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So you were basically pursuing colors.
Yes.
Different kinds of colors.
And the thing that pulled me, I think, Tish, was the need to create. I didn't want to just copy nature. I wanted to bring something out of myself and say, this is who I am.
This comes from inside.
Right, right. This is my whatever to the world.
You know what I want to ask you? No matter how much drive or talent someone has, do you still have to learn techniques?
Oh, heavens, yes.
Because you talk a lot about how you took workshops and learned how to use color and different techniques for
And now I'm going to go right back to the beginning and start over again with watercolor and see if I can master it. You can see that I have a bit of a tremor, so things are
so that will
difficult.
Be a real it'll be a real challenge.
It will be a challenge, but lots of artists have changed course like that.
Oh, absolutely.
And some have gone from abstraction into representational work.
Uh-huh.
I can't come up with a name at the moment, but, you know, give me 2 hours and I will.
You're talking about realism?
Yes,
and,
right.
Yeah.
And some have gone from realism to abstraction.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
But I think my path has been from representation, then color, then finally just abstraction without any content.
Uh-huh. So you were trying to pull parts of yourself out to represent on canvas.
Yes.
And did you discover some new things about yourself while you were doing that? Did it ever scare you?
Terrified me.
Really?
In a way. I mean, I got wilder and wilder, and I thought, what am I doing at my age? But
it was actually self-discovery in some ways for you.
It was self-discovery, and if I could make something beautiful, then I felt that was perhaps my last gift. Mm-hmm. You know, if I could give something back to the world. I can't, you know, I'm not involved in as much in good works as I used to be. But so, did I answer the question?
Well, I was just mm-hmm. wondering, just saying that you were, instead of just copying nature, you were trying to pull something up from yourself.
I was trying to pull something out of myself and find out who I was. And I think what I'm really about is this balance between shapes, colors, lines. My whole life is sort of based on balancing.
Uh-huh. Do you remember when you first started painting and you first showed some of your work to somebody? What was that like?
It was terrifying.
Who did you show? Best friends or fellow artists?
Suicide prevention. I put it on my office wall.
Really?
Yes. No, if that isn't terrifying, because 200 or 300 people would come through and
uh-huh. And this is when you were doing representative
That's right.
stuff.
That, yes.
You know, totally would make mm-hmm. sense. Somebody would say, that's a pretty landscape.
Right. Uh-huh. And then somebody invited me to show at State of the Art. So I did show there.
And that was terrifying, too.
Everything was terrifying, because at that time we had a critic at the Journal. And he pulled no punches whatsoever.
And so what kind of reception did you get from the critic?
I got a good reception, because I was the only watercolorist in the gallery, but he was kind.
And in the ensuing years, have you followed any kind of criticism? And I don't mean criticism in regard to negative, but I mean people reviewing. Do you care?
I do care. Uh-huh. I do care, and I'm part of a critique group that meets once every couple of weeks to go over each other's work. And, yes, I care a lot.
What do people think, yeah.
Yes, it matters a lot to me that the gallery members like my work or tolerate it or whatever. You know, anybody can do anything they want after they're in over there. Uh-huh. But I have had good reception there.
Uh-huh. And what about selling? Is that important when you're pursuing something that you've wanted to do all your life? Do you need to be able to sell then?
No, I don't need to be able to sell.
Really?
They're my children in a way. And, of course, the things that I like the best are the things that everybody else likes the best. But I have sold quite a lot of stuff.
And it's hard
it's
to get
nice.
It's hard to say goodbye to your
that
babies,
is
right?
Not, that uh-huh. is not my central motivation.
Uh-huh. But you do want your stuff to be seen and appreciated. And a lot of artists interpret that as, if my stuff sells, that means it's popular and it's reaching people, right?
I want to say yes, but
well, I'm sure this is something you can have debates about, because a lot of people have different ideas about what's successful as an artist.
Exactly. Well, I want to be able to express what I'm trying to express, and I want to keep growing, and that's the thrill of this, that no matter how old I get, there's always something more I can do, and crazy as it is, I just keep doing it.
Well, I think it's interesting that you did go from doing standard landscapes into abstract renderings. Did you feel like that you could show emotion in a, you know, more concrete way with abstract?
I think with the color and the line, the color and the shape, I went for minimal shapes, like 5 or 7 or 8 shapes. It's not clear to me that the emotion I feel comes through, but maybe it does.
Well, I'm sure it does in some ways. If you're selling paintings and people are appreciating them, they're taking something from them.
And I'm very touched when they want them, you know. Very touched.
Really?
Yes. it's very nice because, you know, then I have a friend.
Yeah. Well, you know, I also wonder about process with artists. Are you suddenly sitting there on the couch and watching TV and you suddenly go, I've got to get to the canvas. I've got this idea in my head.
Exactly what happens.
Really?
Exactly what happens.
And
right.
Does it come to you in words?
Bingo. I will think, yes, I have a project that I'm going to complete by Tuesday, if I can possibly manage it, of my mother and myself at the same ages, same age.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can finish my self-portrait by Tuesday, I will show it.
If you're just joining us, my guest is artist and painter Marianne Van Soest. Now, do you as a painter feel like you have to explain your work? I know a lot of painters who say, I don't want to put my interpretation in a painting at all. I want people to be able to draw out what they want to see. How do you feel about interpreting your work for people?
I don't think words do it as well as simply the visual impact.
So it speaks for itself in some ways.
Whatever they get out of it is fine.
Uh-huh. And you don't feel like you have to
explain. Yes, these are analogous colors, and that's why they pop, and that sort of thing. But what they get out of them is sort of what they put into it.
Yeah, I would think so too.
Yeah.
But I also know people who don't see much art, and when they do see it, they say things like, "But what does it mean?"
Right.
You know, they say that about poetry, about short stories and paintings.
Of course.
And a lot of painters refuse to interpret for people. And I was just wondering if you were somebody, if you were having a showing at a gallery and people came up to you and said, Marianne, what does that painting mean?
Yes.
That
what is
basically,
that blob over there?
Basically brown and, you know.
Exactly. Well, I will say it just came out of my psyche. And that's about all I can say because I don't think they have any objective meaning other than the balance.
Yeah. Are you somebody, I also know quite a few artists who want to use art for politics and to make statements about culture, politics, current events. You don't think art should be used that way or you don't want to use it that way?
I don't know how.
Mm-hmm.
Have
you thought about it, though?
I have.
Because a lot of people do use art.
I know.
To start movements.
Yes. Well, alas, I'm not there.
Yeah.
I kind of wish I could be, but I don't think my work
all your years with suicide prevention and the obviously heavy situations that you probably had to deal with, has that ever been translated into any of your paintings, do you think?
Well, I'm hoping that it has enriched. That will give me satisfaction. I think if I'm growing at all, it's because of that experience. And then the knowledge that I am still alive and maybe I'll be alive next year and, you know, I can continue with this.
Uh-huh. So painting is proof that you're alive
in some ways.
Yeah.
I'm not stagnating. I'm not just sitting on the couch all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope I'm getting somewhere. At any rate, I get in the zone, and it's complete happiness.
Oh, that's great. Do you decide when you think of a concept and have to get to the studio, do you think in terms of what size you want to pursue? Do you paint in different sizes? I can't tell from your web page how big or how small.
But my latest ones are big.
Big?
3 feet? 3 feet. Well, you see, I'm short, and so I can't reach more than about 3 feet.
There's such thing as ladders.
That's true. That's true.
But so you paint canvases that you can reach from the ground, right?
Right. And watercolor sheets are 22 by 30. So if you do a full sheet of watercolor, it's only that big. Then you have to frame it. So that's one of the problems with watercolor. They have to be behind glass. They're heavy. They break.
So are you mainly doing watercolor now?
No, I am not mainly
doing watercolor. But you're going to go back to it.
I sort of cycle through watercolor and acrylic. I've had a lot of fun with heavy texture and sort of jewel-like color. And I've done, the latest things have been oils. Oil is a lot of fun.
And do you mix your own paints? How do you work?
Not from powdered pigments. No, I buy them.
And then you mix the colors.
And then I mix, right, as I go along.
Wow, that's really interesting that you pursued this so late in life. Do you have regrets that you didn't start this earlier?
Oh, absolutely.
Would you have wanted to have a whole career as a painter, do you think?
I would have liked a whole career as something in the fine arts, yes. But, you know, some painter said, well, the first 50 years are the hardest. Well, I didn't have 50.
The first 50 years are the hardest? And there might have been Picasso, right? He lived to be 90-something. Wow.
So, yes, I do kind of regret it. But then I would not have had that very rich experience that I have had. So, I don't know, you make a choice and...
Yeah, well, to tell us what painters have influenced you, too. Obviously, even though you weren't pursuing art all these years, you must have still appreciated and been wanting to go see art, right?
Oh, yes. Yes, when I finally got to Chicago and I saw art.
And so who has influenced you?
I think Cézanne. Rembrandt, of course, for the drawing.
Oh, yeah? Really, for the drawing?
For the drawing, yes. Rothko, Diebenkorn.
What about people like Jackson Pollock? I mean, a lot of people either write him off or think he was one of the greats, you know, because he started new techniques.
I do think he was. I saw a wonderful show in London of his work, and I could see where he finally got it. And he began the dance, and it was beautiful, just exquisite. But that's not me. That's not me. Yeah. I have to have limits on things.
Well, do you think the fact that you started later in life, you were more of an intact person, and you know how young painters imitate at first. Do you feel like that you were, you know, an adult and an impact, a real personality at that time?
And I guess I was a real personality, but I was a dud.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, I was a rank beginner. And so I just had to do it really, really quickly. But those workshops, you know, I said, I got these fantastic workshops with people like Christopher Schenck and Skip Lawrence and Catherine Liu.
Were you going all over the country for
this? Well, a lot of them were down at Spring Maid Beach in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, but I went to the Southwest and Maine and all over.
What would you tell senior citizens or people who've always wanted to pursue art? To inspire them, to give them some encouragement, to tell them, what, never give up?
Never give up. Keep doing it. Keep doing it and take workshops.
It's important for people to learn some techniques.
Keep, because it shows you what high-quality work can be and teaches you how to see. I think that's the trick. A lot of people just can't see well enough to determine what good quality is.
Well, a lot of people aren't looking either. You know, being able to see as a photographer or anything,
right,
a poet or a writer,
exactly,
one has to learn how to look.
Right.
And I just wonder if you can really teach somebody that. You can show them techniques, perhaps?
This is a very good question, and I'm not certain, but I think so. I think so. Because I don't think I was born with this.
But you were born with some kind of desire.
I was born with the desire. And I did practice as a child for years and years.
Are you an artist who's worried, like many people in all of our communities, about the fact that the arts seems to be leaving the education systems because of budgetary considerations?
Am.
It's really frightening to me that this culture, which is based to me on art, could be leaving us.
But Cap sent me an email about mentoring high school students.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
That was a great idea.
Yeah.
Great idea.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe they'll find it some other place than in the school.
Did you remember having art when you were a kid in the schools?
Yes, I did. We had art and music.
Yeah. And so that must have affected
that
your
helped.
Desires as well.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Before we run out of time, I want to talk about the fact that you are a member of the State of the Art Gallery.
Yes.
Tell us how that experience has enriched your artist's life. Is it helpful to have all those people in your family?
Oh, it's very helpful. Uh-huh. Yes, because each person is different, and you are working, you know, sort of toward the top of your skill all the time.
Uh-huh.
Just to keep up.
So you get encouragement and you have dialogues. And did you talk to people in the State of the Art Gallery about your current work and talk about problems? And
we need to talk more. That is one of the things that has been slightly disappointing, that all of us come in, oh, yes, we're going to have this community, and then all we're doing is working or doing administrative stuff or hanging shows or something like that.
Uh-huh.
But we have the community, and we have the intelligence and the taste and
desire. I think would think you'd want to have a round table.
Yes.
As long as you've got all these people gathered together under a certain premise.
Right.
You know, like an Algonquin club.
Exactly. Exactly. We're getting there. Slowly.
So that's another reason to pursue art, because you also are pursuing a community.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
That is right. So I have these various art communities that are very important to me.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I absolutely can understand that.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll be pursuing art for the rest of your life. You can't imagine not, right? I mean,
yes.
We will expect to see Marianne Van Soos stuff for the rest of your life.
Let's hope.
Can you tell us anything about, is there a show? Is there any place where people can see your work in the next few weeks, in the next few months?
The members always have something in the second room.
Stuff.
Mm-hmm. It's a revolving once a month change, and I'm hoping to finish. I will have something, yes, in the next show, which goes up next Tuesday.
Okay, so the State of the Art Gallery, you'll be able to see Marianne Van Soos' book.
And in a year, I will have a show with Diana Oslins.
Ah, so
that'll be very exciting.
In the gallery, that'll be in 2012.
Yes. August 2012.
We will look forward to that. Is there any contact information you can give people? Perhaps the gallery, they can see some of your paintings on the website. Do you know the address, the web address?
It's www.soag.org.
Okay. Well, Marianne Van Soos, thank you so much for joining us. This has been a great pleasure.
Thank you, Tish.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.